Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Today is October 26, 2025. And our guest is Mark Moisher. He is an election law attorney, a constitutional attorney. So we're talking about Prop 50, and we are discussing election laws. And I thought, Mark, you deserved some good, like, lead-in music to your theory. You said, we're not going to require tinfoil hats, but my friend Weird Al made a fun song about it, so I thought it might put us in the mood. Hit it, Alex.
By the way, I cracked the code. I figured out the shadow organizations and the Illuminati know that they're finally primed for world domination. And soon you've got black helicopters coming across the border, puppet masters for the new world order. There's always someone that's watching you. And still the government won't admit they faked a whole moon landing. Thought control race, psychotronic scanning. Don't mind that. I'm protected cause I made this hat from aluminum foil.
Foil.
Where I had this foil lined in case an alien's inclined to probe your butt or read your mind. Looks a bit peculiar.
Peculiar.
Seems a little crazy. Someday I'll prove there's a big conspiracy.
Oh my gosh.
You know what? If you're gonna, you know, the thing is, all our conspiracies, we've had to get new ones because they all came true.
That was brilliant.
I don't know what the song really is in real life, but Weird Al is a, I don't know. My stepson used to love him, and I thought the kid was an idiot. Now I'm like, oh, he might have just been a genius, actually, after all.
Yeah, his Amish Paradise one is probably his best, though.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, you're right. I do like that one a lot, a really lot. So you said that this kind of sounds like a conspiracy, but I'm sure it's totally true. So lay out for us what the whole goal is to jury-rig everything for 2026.
Okay, so let's step back here for a second, and I'm going to ask you a very difficult question here.
Okay.
How many Republican congressmen are there, and how many Democrat congressmen are there?
In the state of California?
No, nationwide.
Nationwide, what are we, 18-ish Republican, 16-ish. I don't know, what are we these days? Got rid of Mac.
Yeah,
Gates. Did we swear someone new?
We're within two or three right now. I think it's 219, 216. I think we got a 3-vote margin or something like that.
It's skinny.
It depends on what happens. But for all intents and purposes, we are at 50-50, right?
Yeah.
Which means there's a lot of national attention of who picks up a couple seats and who doesn't.
Correct.
Now, you remember, you've heard a lot of stories about how the census really messed up and it, you know, resulted in blue states getting 6 more congressmen than they should have had, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So when the next census happens, there's already going to be like a +6 in favor of Republicans. So the 219 would be like 225, and the 215 or 16 is now 210. All of a sudden, if you didn't have it, there'd be a little bit, you know, Speaker Johnson would have a little bit of breathing room, right?
Yeah.
And then the people are actually studying the trends of what's going to happen for the next census, and based upon COVID and the mass exodus from the state of California and from New York and some exodus from Massachusetts and from Illinois, people fleeing these poor blue state decision-making processes, they are predicting that there will be an additional 6 to 12 seat swing in addition to the mistakes made in 2020 that will be affected by the 2030 census. So all of a sudden, Republicans doing nothing, there is a possibility that 2030 census is going to be a net swing of 30, could be, you know, 20 to 30 seats for Republicans. And that's huge, right? You know, that's a whole lot of breathing room right there. But then in addition to that, there is a case before the United States Supreme Court, which is called Calais versus the state of Louisiana. And in that case, one of the issues that the Supreme Court is looking at is, do we end affirmative action in politics? Because we have these things called the Voting Rights Act, and it's basically this complex mathematical formula where they make a determination that there are enough minorities living in an area that we have to draw the congressional district in such a way that we ensure that the minority candidate is going to get elected. Now, what happens is, you know, here in California, down in the Central Valley, they decided that they needed three voting rights districts in the Central Valley. The Central Valley really only has five congressional districts. So what that meant is that the two non-voting rights districts look absolutely hideous as you kind of squeeze all the white voters into the other districts. So, you know, it creates a lot of bad-looking districts when you start drawing lines just based upon we want to get these Asian voters here and these Asian voters here and these Asian voters over here and try to put them all together to create an Asian district. Well, we're going to take all these Latinos over here, and, oh, we got to cut out these white neighborhoods here. And the Supreme Court, you know, we don't know what the Supreme Court is going to do. But in listening to the questions of the judges and analyzing the question, there are many people who believe that the Supreme Court very likely will end this program of state having to draw districts in order to ensure that minorities are able to get elected. And one of the things that was before the Supreme Court is that right now 75% of all African American congressmen do not come from a district that was created to ensure that African Americans can get elected, which means there is really not a need in our country. We are not living in the 1860s. We're not living in the 1960s anymore. You know, people of color are able to get elected in Congress in the United States. We don't need to create these special districts just to ensure that we have minority representation in Congress. And so this is not conservative. This is some of the most liberal minority rights activist group. They have said that there is likely 19 voting rights district seats that are all held by Democrats, that if this happens, will go away, and it's another 19, that'd be a 38 vote swing. So we've already talked about how the natural progression of the country is 20 to 30 votes. If you add, you know, another 19, which is another 38, are you starting to get the magnitude of what's going on right now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's take the third element. The third element, which is what I tease, is 3 years before the census.
Right.
The Secretary of Commerce is supposed to send to Congress the topic of what he wants to put on the census.
Wait, say that your phone was kind of cutting out a little bit.
Three years before the census.
Yeah.
And the census is April 1st, 2030. Okay, so 3 years before that is going to be April 1st, 2027. So 3 years before that, the census, the Secretary of Commerce must send to Congress the list of questions that he wants to put on the census.
Oh, the list of questions.
All right.
Okay.
Not the questions, the topics. I'm sorry, the topics.
Okay.
2 years.
They don't just use the same ones all the time?
Nope.
Oh.
2 years before the census, he has to send to Congress the list of the questions that he wants to put on. So that is April 1st, 2027, there is a report given to Congress on the topics that he's going to cover, and April 1st, 2028, he's going to send to Congress the questions he wants to have on the census. Okay? Who is in Congress on April 1st, 2027 and April 1st, 2028? Someone who is elected in 2026.
Oh, okay, right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Congress that is elected in a year ending in six is the census Congress. They are the ones that are going to be reviewing and have the opportunity to, you know, make all sorts of procedural nightmares,
right,
for budgetary purposes, or they're the ones, they are the census Congress. Now, you and I both know that Donald Trump wants a census question, or wants a citizenship question on the census, right?
Right.
They are saying, many experts out there have said, that if the citizenship question ends up on the census, and Congress then does something about representation based upon that, but even if it's on it, it's going to affect Congress another 3 to 5. But even if it's not on it, it could, or if it is on it, and Congress does representation based upon it, it could be another 20 feet, which I think. So when you take the natural changing of the country, you take the end of affirmative action for Congress, and you add in that there is a potential that the census will have a citizenship question and that representation will be based upon citizenship.
Oh.
If that happens, those three things together, the Democrat Party is going to be like the Democrat Party of 1866. They are going to be a regional party with no national appeal, no ability to elect anybody. They're basically going to be a party of coastal elite, and they will not be able to control Congress or the White House for 30 to 40 years.
Ouch.
So, by winning in 2026, by putting all hands on deck, winning in 2026, what they hope to do is stop the citizenship question and also probably try, you know, by stopping the citizenship question, but then trying to get their candidate in on 2028, mess up the census again, you know, like Biden was able to mess up the census and the results thereby, you know, by messing up the census, ensure that, okay, yes, maybe we have lost a little bit, maybe there's going to be some migration that we lose, but they hope for at least another decade to hold off this inevitable tide where this radical, crazy agenda of the Democrat Party, which has completely left the mainstream American. I mean, mainstream America does not want men in women's locker rooms. They don't. The stuff that's being pushed right now by the Democrat Party and the special interests of the Democrat Party is not in line with mainstream America. And there is this mass exodus going on. And yes, it's even going on here in California. In the last 2 years, voting registration, the Republican Party has gained over 550,000 registrations over the Democrat Party. We have closed the gap over 500,000 voters in just the last 2 years. They can't keep this pace up for much longer, even in California. So this, what I see the special election of Prop 50 all about, it is a last-ditch effort to take advantage of Trump derangement syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
To try to get their voters to give the Democrats and to give special interest, the special power for this one election that they intend to use to try to mess with the will of the voters. Because even Democrat voters, the rank and file Democrat voters do not think that that all this illegal immigrants makes any sense. They don't want them taking their jobs. They don't want their housing to be more expensive. They don't want food costs to be more expensive. They don't want transportation costs to be more expensive. They understand that this, the policy of Joe Biden just running this country with illegal immigrants was not good for the country. It was not good for their bottom line. And so what the rank and file Democrat understands is these policies don't work. But they may not like Donald Trump. And so what Gavin Newsom has done is he has taken Trump derangement syndrome, and he is using it to manipulate his voters into doing something that is against their best interest and is against their stated policies. They have made it abundantly clear, Democrat voters have made it abundantly clear that they want this commission. But in the name of this, you know, talking it to Donald Trump, they are going to be willing to destroy the thing that they love so much, the thing that they believe is good government, just to take it to Donald Trump. And so, you know, Gavin Newsom is a very despicable person. We have plenty of good names, nicknames that he has rightfully earned. But what we have to understand is that this radical left, this socialist communist agenda of the special interest, left-leaning special interest, they read what is happening, and they want to hold on to their power as long as they can. And in order to do that, they need to make sure that they have a chance of holding Congress in 2026. And then, you know, if they could hold Congress in 2026, that gives them the ability to maybe win the presidency in 2028. And if they could do that, then maybe they can hold off the inevitable for maybe another 10, 20 years. But if we defeat them with defeating Prop 50, if we get in there and ensure that the Republicans win Congress in 2026 so that we get the citizenship question on there, and then we make sure that representation is based upon citizenship, we have the ability to ensure that, okay, maybe we don't get rid of this cuckoo left in San Francisco and, you know, downtown L.A.
Right, but we didn't give them the keys to the city.
Yeah.
All the cities, actually. Oh, my gosh. Well, okay.
I don't think your general voting block is aware of that at all.
No. So I would always encourage people to send the archive to people. But honestly, I was just texting a lady who really is plugged into election integrity in another area of the country, and I'm like, you know, when I post the archive later today, you got to listen to the first, part of the second hour if you listen to nothing else. Okay. So we have to take a quick break to go crush up our tinfoil hats and, you know, since we got to
get back to reality.
Yeah, well, we got to find a new conspiracy theory because obviously that one's going to, you know, that one is, that one screams true to me, actually.
Yeah.
Very cool. Not cool, but very cool you told everyone. We're going to take a fast break. Come back with our guest, Mark Moisher. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Thank you.
So the people who are writing the maps and putting Prop 50 on the ballot, I think that's what they were listening to, actually. I think we need to just really, really stop this in its tracks.
Yeah.
How likely is it, Mark, that if this were to pass, how likely is it that this starts kind of a grass fire across the country, either for or against, in this type of, you know, this type of, I guess, ballot box warfare, with the gerrymandering of districts? Does this set off a wave of it, or?
Well, here's, you know, redistricting nuclear option is really what Gavin Newsom is trying to do right now. And it's up to the voters of California to really say, we don't want to be governed by a madman. I remember as a child doing nuclear drills that if a nuclear bomb went off, we were supposed to duck under our desk.
Our tiny desks.
Yeah. I'm sorry. But it took a Ronald Reagan and a Gorbachev to put their, you know, there were plenty of war hawks in Reagan's administration who did not like what he was doing with Gorbachev. And there were plenty of generals in Russia who hated what Gorbachev was doing. But the two of them decided that, you know what, we're going to put the people above the politics. And what is going on right now is Gavin Newsom is blaming Texas and saying, Texas is doing this redistrict, and so what we are doing is a response to Texas. Now, I find it very interesting because Ohio also is doing a redistricting this year, and it's most likely going to pick up two Republican seats. But Ohio is doing it because a court ordered them to do it. This happens all the time that courts order states to redraw.
Well, isn't that what happened in Texas?
It is. They were under threat of litigation. What ended up happening in Texas is that there was a county that was sued by Joe Biden, and the county was sued because they did not consider race enough in gerrymandering their district. They didn't create a special affirmative action district for the Hispanics and Blacks. They did, you know, they didn't take what's called a coalition district. They didn't draw a specialty racial gerrymandered district that ensured that the minorities of Hispanics and Blacks together could vote to ensure that a minority candidate had representation in the Galveston County Commissioner's race. That case went all the way up to the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit said, no, that is unconstitutional, Joe Biden. There is no requirement in the United States Constitution that you create districts on a racial basis where you take this minority group and that minority group, and together you call them a special voting rights district. That is unconstitutional. As a result of that decision, the Texas legislature, which had back in 2021 drawn four of those districts for Congress, that Fifth Circuit decision basically meant that those four congressional seats were unconstitutional. And Harmeet Dillon, the head of the Civil Rights Department at the DOJ, sent Greg Abbott a letter and said, what are you going to do about this? We could do this the hard way, or we could do this the easy way. I could sue you, and we were going to get a court order, and the courts are going to say you have to redraw the line, or you just redraw the line. So while Texas was not directly under order of the court, everybody who is anybody in the redistricting world knew that Texas needed to redraw their lines to take care of these unconstitutional districts. So in a way, Texas had unconstitutional districts, that they followed the law in order to make sure that they were constitutional. California is under no threat of litigation. There has been no lawsuit. There is no judicial order. And so what California wants to do is they want to make their district partisan, something that the commission is not allowed to do. Our redistricting commission is not allowed to consider politics in drawing lines. They want to consider politics. And so what special interest wants to do, special interest wants to create this third reason why in California we will do a mid-decade redistricting. Most people don't know that there are two ways that we do mid-district decade in California. One is if after the commission draws a line, we the people go out and get enough signatures, we get a referendum, and we, at the next election, we vote on it, that would force the commission to go back and redraw the line. The second way is you sue. And if a court orders it, then the commission goes back and draws the line. But in both of those scenarios, the commission is redrawing the lines, and they must redraw the lines without considering politics. Now, what special interest in D.C. wants to do is they want to be able to draw the lines in such a way to ensure that the politicians are not accountable to the voters. Because when politicians are not accountable to the voters because they have such a safe seat, rather than go home to the district and campaign and educate the voters on why they did what they did, they go on foreign junkets on the lobbyist dime, and they are able to, you know, they're not accountable to voters. They're accountable to special interests. And so the lines drawn by the commission had like about 10 competitive races. Well, the lines drawn by the politicians and special interests have maybe one competitive district. So what is going on, and this is why it's not going to be temporary, because if special interest realizes that all they need to do is throw $100 million and they can now change nonpartisan commission lines into partisan lines, they are now creating a third exception in the California Constitution in how you can get a mid-decade redistricting. And what that will mean is in 2030, if the party in power does not like what is going on, then with the commission map, well, then they'll just go get special interest to donate $100 million, and we'll be doing this all over again, another Prop 50. And so that is why it is so important that the voters of California tell Gavin Newsom and the Democrats in control, we don't want a madman at the helm creating a nuclear war with the Republican Party, because if California goes down this path and votes yes, and I'm not able to put a hold on it, through the courts, and I, you know, I'm very optimistic about the lawsuit that I'm going to be bringing, but if, you know, courts don't always work as fast as I want them to. So if I'm not able to put a hold on it, you vote yes, I don't get a hold on it, what is going to happen if Florida will redistrict? You know, other states are going to redistrict, and it's all going to happen in January of this year. And we're basically going to be going and doing this nuclear option where politics is going to be so predominant in the redistricting process. It's not that it's not already bad. I mean, take a look at Illinois, and take a look at Massachusetts, and take a look at, you know, all the New England states where I heard something like it's like 25 congressmen, they're all Democrats, even though when you look at that whole entire region, Republicans are 40%. You know, Democrats have been masters for decades at using politics to try to maximize their representation. Okay? What is going on right now is that, you know, President Trump has shown a flashlight on the rats of the, you know, the political gerrymandering that goes on. And he says, you know what, we're not going to let you get away with this. And so, you know, Texas had to do what Texas had to do. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They were going to get sued.
And for the people who will say, like, well, you know, the Republicans are running everything in like, if they say that in California, I mean, that's ludicrous.
That's
we have a supermajority in the state legislature. Out of 52 members of Congress in the state of California, we have 9. There are 9 Republicans out of 52 currently. And after this, there will likely only be four.
Yeah.
So how do you explain that?
Republicans control 40% of the vote in California.
Yeah, with four members of
75% of the assembly and the senators.
So that just shows you that the Republicans aren't voting.
Well, it shows you that they can't. The seats are in a lot of cases, the seats are unwinnable.
Well, that's true.
It isn't. Well, let's face it. We got Katie Porter running, who might be like the gift that keeps on giving to the Republican Party for mostly ever. Could you imagine being on her staff? Wow. But I think that the level of gerrymandering has allowed candidates like Katie Porter to even bubble to the surface. Can you imagine back in the day? How could she have even gotten on the ticket?
Well, without
the giant pause where everybody scratches their head.
Without universal mail-in balloting and ballot harvesting and hundreds of billions of dollars, she never would have beat Rohrabacher.
No. That made no sense. Never made any sense.
Mark, if let's assume that the 50 passes and you file your lawsuit, will it be heard in court? How long would that take in order to stop it from actually
going into... How about this? Let's take a really quick break because we do want to unravel that because there are some timing issues with the filing of the congressional seats and all that stuff. Can we do that when we come back, Mark?
Let's do it on our final segment.
Okay. We're going to go away with a couple of... go away and come back with a couple of songs the fight back songs, right?
Yeah. Right?
We're in the fight back mode.
Fight, fight, fight.
Fight, fight, fight. All right. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. What Gavin should hear on November 4th.
There you go.
That should be playing like a little soundtrack at his little celebration party. All right, Mark.
Let's talk about litigation.
Yes, let's talk about that.
So, first off, I have a nice little thing. Freedom is not free, and justice is not quick. And... So,
you're a real buzzkill. Shoot, I don't have a song about that. Where's Weird Al when I need him?
So we're going to start off with kind of some deadlines. The first deadline is December 19th. that is the date that people can pull, basically pull papers in order to get signatures in lieu of a filing fee. Now, candidates will not actually pull papers until February. What these two dates are kind of the soft opening of the congressional season and the hard opening of the congressional season. So the February deadline, or the February date is really the true start of the congressional season. But there's kind of this warm-up period that's December 19th. The Supreme Court has come up with a decision that's called the Purcell Principle. And it's kind of, to put it in layman's term, once a race has started, courts are not supposed to stop the race or change the rules of the race. And so when that comes to redistricting, is the redistricting maps that are in place as of, and I don't know which date the court's going to say, is it the soft opening of December 19th or the hard opening in early February, but when we hit that date, at that point in time, courts are no longer allowed to, they can make decisions, but they can't have an effect on that election. So if the voters vote yes on Prop 50, the Prop 50 maps are kind of what the rule is. What we are going to be doing is we're going to be going in and we're going to ask the court to make what's called a preliminary injunction. It means before you hear all the evidence, before we put on days and days and days of experts, where we cross-examine the experts and we get all their testimony, before we even get there, we're going to do what's a preliminary showing. We're going to put together some of our best evidence and our best law and just say, based upon the law, based upon this evidence right now, we are making a preliminary showing that we are likely to prevail. And because we are likely to prevail, we want you to keep the status quo. Don't let the new maps go into effect. Let's keep the old maps in place so that, you know, people are not jeopardized of their rights for something that the court, we believe that you're later going to find that these new maps are unconstitutional, so let's just keep the status quo. That is what we're going to try to get a three-judge panel to make a decision on by about Thanksgiving. So they'll have about 3 weeks. And it's not uncommon for a court to take a week or two to make a decision. You know, some of these Biden judges have been making preliminary injunctions within 2 hours of the liberal group filing their motion. So when the judge wants to move fast, they can make these injunction decisions fairly quickly. Once they make that decision, whether they go for us or go against us, the loser is going to go file with the Supreme Court. These congressional races are not your typical federal court. You don't start with a, you know, single district judge. You actually start off with a three-judge panel, and that decision is appealable straight to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will not do a lot of briefing. It's going to be what's on their rocket docket. It's just going to be briefing on the paper, and it generally takes about 10 to 14 days for the Supreme Court to process a injunction pending appeal, or a stay pending appeal, and we have seen this happen, you know, just, back in 2022, they did this in the Alabama case where a judge heard evidence and said, hey, something is unconstitutional, but, you know, the Supreme Court had to come in and say, no, you're going to keep the old map while you fully litigate this entire matter. And so, we believe that based upon past precedents of the Supreme Court, the makeup of the Supreme Court, and the oral arguments that they heard in Calais, that there is a good possibility that the Supreme Court would enter a stay and not allow the new map to take effect as long as I properly have presented the evidence of why these new maps are unconstitutional.
But the initial filing, that is that heard by the Ninth Circuit?
No, it's actually going to be filed in a federal district court.
Okay.
And so you're going to have a single federal district judge.
Okay.
They then make a referral to the head of the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit will then appoint one judge out of the Ninth Circuit, and then we'll pick another district judge in the circuit. So it could be another judge in California. It could be a judge in Idaho. It could be a judge in Montana. It could be a judge in Washington or, you know, anywhere in the Ninth Circuit. It could be any district judge. And so it creates a special three-judge panel. That three-judge panel will rule on the injunction, and they'll basically have the entire case also. And that decision, that three-judge panel, that special three-judge panel decision is appealable straight to the Supreme Court.
Okay. Okay. So it's not done if they vote against it initially.
Yeah. Our job is to try to get them to make a decision by Thanksgiving and then appeal to the Supreme Court so that they could have the ability to make the decision by what I call the soft opening day of the congressional election on December 19th. And, you know, if the three-judge panel does make a decision by Thanksgiving, then I have no doubt that the Supreme Court could enter a decision by the 19th. The only question becomes if the three-judge panel decides that they want to wait until the middle of December to make it, you know, how, you know, there'll be some, a lot of work that I'll be doing to try to keep the fire on to keep the thing moving.
So. Wow. But, okay, as far as, you know, I mean, I think the danger in a way is that people are thinking, well, this can't be constitutional. I'm sure that, you know, lawsuits will save us.
Yeah, so we don't need to vote.
Yeah, right, back to that.
Back to that again.
Everything ends with, oh dear, please don't, you know, sit it out,
let's
right?
Let's avoid all that and vote it no. And now let's go the other way. If it doesn't pass, is that going to be litigated?
If it doesn't pass,
yes.
I couldn't imagine a lawsuit that could be brought that, you know, if it doesn't pass.
Right.
I think it's just over.
It's done. Right. So it's
just, and I'll move on to my next project. And then believe you me, there's enough stuff in the election integrity world that I can do.
Can only imagine.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So if we weren't all doing this, actually looking at our time, we're in the 6 minute mark. The idea that people get special consideration based on their ethnicity for jobs, for loans, for voting, for all these different things. At the end of the day, that all just, you know, for a group of people that are so myopically focused on racism, I was raised that is racism.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, singling people out because of their color is racism. So how do you think this as a voting strategy, you know, this whole Voting Rights Act, maybe we can put a finer point on that a little bit. You think that'll go away and we'll all just get to be Americans?
I mean, the purpose of the 14th, 15th Amendment was that our politicians are supposed to be colorblind in making the law. That is the purpose. Now, unfortunately, there are some people out there whose racism is so ingrained in their DNA that they can't help but being racist. And as a result of, you know, them constantly trying to get around the 14th and 15th Amendment, they were, you know, suppressing the ability of minority groups to be heard. That's a ugly part of our history, okay? It doesn't mean that you did it, doesn't mean that I did it, but there were individuals who were elected, who were in those positions, who were suppressing the voice of the minority group. But that is in the past, and we can't keep living in the past. America has, I don't want to say completely solved the problem, but the problem of the 1860s and the 1960s is not the problem of 2025. And we cannot continue to, because the longer we are focusing in as race as a predominant factor in determining who gets to represent who, that as long as we are doing that, A, we're not living in a colorblind society, thus we're violating the 14th and 15th Amendment, but we are also continuing the narrative and continuing the discussion.
Exactly.
When we need, you know, I actually think that California should be a model to the world in how we, you know, look at our politicians statewide. We have a white guy, we have a white woman, we have a black woman, we have an Hispanic man, we have an Asian man, we have an Asian woman, we have another white guy, we have another black guy. We have our statewide leaders are a true rainbow. You know, it's more political than it is color. Californians are looking past color. We don't need to continue the narrative of racial gerrymandering in order to ensure that minorities' voices are heard. No. When we don't do it, you know, when we don't make political decisions with race as a predominant factor, racial minorities are thriving right now in America, especially in California.
Yeah, so let's just go back to dividing it the correct way, which is by population, by not political, not racial.
Well, it makes a lot more sense to have it be in you know, like farming districts, rural districts, those kinds of things. It's very hard, especially at the federal level, to keep up with everything that's affecting everybody at all times, in all places. You can only be on two committees, three if you get special permission, but you're not on every single committee. So if you have a predominantly rural district, you better have somebody who knows rural land issues, has some experience in that field,
right,
and can focus their efforts on that. But if you stick them with, you know, also huge cities and a bunch of other stuff, it's just, your representation is diluted just based
right
on the number of hours.
You're going to be experts in housing and transportation.
Number of hours in a day. But, your urban guys, they should be smart at all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they should.
And they won't be. I mean, especially in our district, I mean, they have no knowledge of the workings of, you know, Northern California, not San Francisco, which I think they consider Northern California, but Northern California. There's a whole different set of issues up here.
Yep, had a conversation with somebody from one of our federal senators' office, Adam Schiff, Monday for an hour and 15 minutes, and helped them understand the issues on wolves and cartel marijuana grows. Just did those two things for well over an hour.
Neither of which are even an issue in the southern part or central part of the state.
But here's somebody who's representing our whole state who really, I mean, smart, had the foresight to say, hey, we don't know about this. Can you guys smarten us up? But we are smart about that up here, and did clue them in. So we're rolling into the garage, Mark. We have to run away again. Imagine that. But I did pick out the perfect song that I want Gavin Newsom to hear on the 4th. I've spent 2 hours thinking about it, and I found it. Mark Moisher, this one's for you.
Thanks for being on, Mark.
We the People Radio.
Thanks for having me.
.us.
Well, the party was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey, yeah, B-I-O.
And everybody having a ball.
Hey, hey, B-I-O.
Until the fellas start the name calling.
B-I-O.
And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor white shot.